to episode 007. We are the facts, the established facts. I don't see what's so funny.
Me either. Not at all. It just sounded very shaken, not stirred.
Yeah, right? We are going to introduce everybody this evening, starting here on my right.
This is Don.
Are you all right?
Yeah. Yes, I'm just trying to get over that.
What, should I have a getting a groaner foul? Do I need to apologize now?
A groaner foul, yeah. Wow. It was just an odd job done by your part. That's all.
Oh, yeah.
This is Deb. The double X chromosome has returned. Rumors of my death were greatly exaggerated.
Indeed.
And this is Josh, the man
source
making
of all the death rumors.
I did not kill my wife.
Evil.
She paid me more than you paid me.
That's she right. didn't like the marriage con. I mean,
this episode is just
plummeting. And I'm Anton. Chaos Theory.
Wow. And as always, I am the host, Bond. I mean, Mike.
What?
Where's your Walter PPK?
That's a weapon. We don't endorse such things.
That's right.
Uh-huh. It's a family show.
We're anti-gun usage when it comes to podcasts. You can carry them whenever you want. Just
okay. We are going to continue our search and trek down the alignment track. And up for, I guess, debate is neutral good, and none other than myself get to do the spotlight on neutral good. So, without any further ado, lady and gentlemen, zip it, because it's time for neutral good. Uncalled for. That was much too soon. Okay, so neutral good, as you recalled from a couple episodes ago, Don was commenting on an evil character that we had played that has started in a party that was naturally good, and the character that I played, he came in and he was evil. I ended up at neutral good when the story was finally ending up. And the six-year-long campaign ended. My character, that was chaotic evil, ended up at neutral good. So I guess you can say at some point, neutral good is kind of near and dear to my heart, because this is a six-year-old character that has progressed all the way from pretty much chaotic evil to neutral good. And I will tell you that without just jumping from alignment to alignment, that was probably the hardest thing as a player for me to do. Now, neutral good is known from our reliable sources as the benefactor alignment. Now, some examples of neutral good characters that you would understand are pretty much any hero, as and would you say hero like Spider-Man, Wolverine, Cyclops. You know, these are like heroes, you know, comic heroes and things of that nature that are faced with a public or a media, someone that is opposed to them that is obviously oppressive in nature. So the majority of your X-Men are neutral good. The majority of, you know, like Spider-Man. Spider-Man is neutral good. Other examples is you have things like Zorro. Zorro is neutral good as a character. And these things are these characters are people who will work with the law enforcement or work with the constables or work with, you know, any type of law organization, but they're not really beholden to them. So they're not really under their control. They're not quite like Batman where the commissioner sends the light up in the air and he's really working for the commissioner. But on the same aspect is they are not exactly tied to the way that the law enforcement deal things. So when it comes to doing, I guess, the shady end of work, like, you know, you have to capture the guy, the bad guy, but you you don't have a real clean negotiative way to get him out, you know, in the lawful good kind of way. You send in your lawful, your neutral good guys that still have the ultimate goal of being good and bringing him to justice. But, I mean, if that means they gotta, you know, blast a hole in the wall and kind of do it a little more aggressive nature, then they're not beholden to that same category of, I guess, moral standards of things that they will and will not do to get the job done. Now, don't confuse this with being amoral or immoral or having loose morals, because a neutral good character has very stringent moral, is a very stringent moral character, and there's things that he won't do, but as far as the realm of stuff that he will do anything in his possibility to accomplish these goals. Not just like your lawful guy who needs to bring the guy in for justice and needs to be respectful and needs to be all this, that, and the other. When you look at the very typical good cop, bad cop, the good cop is your lawful good guy, and your bad cop is generally a neutral good cop. Because he will tell you or make you believe anything that he wants you to believe to get the truth out of you. He still ultimately has a goal of a good plan. Like, his ultimate goal is still good in nature, but he will take any alley or back road or whatever to get there. So that makes him a neutral good individual. Now, the difference between, and we have not quite got to chaotic good, but the difference between chaotic good and neutral good is the chaotic character generally doesn't tend to plan or have a course of planned action, where your neutral good tends to have more planning, and then your lawful good tends to go pocket protector, pen, pencil, and we have step A that we have to follow before we can get to step B. And Josh just gives me a crazy look.
Rightfully so.
So like I said, some of your big highlights for neutral good, the majority of your superheroes that you have grown and loved and things of that nature are neutral good, because it's a very typical standard to have the population against them. Like, if you are a Marvel fan, pretty much all of the X-Men, except for maybe minus Wolverine, is neutral good. He's probably chaotic good. But all the rest of your normal X-Men are generally neutral good. And that's driven because they will work with authorities, but how much can you really work with authorities when you have everyone who's afraid of you? So you generally are more, you have this fear element of being afraid of just being who you are, and then you still go out and do good things. And generally, you also look that most of your masked crusaders, of course, minus Batman, most of your masked crusaders are neutral good, because their identity is a big crutch that they have to kind of respect or hide. And so you when you start hiding things from the people or from the other players in your game or whatever, when you start hiding things, your alignment generally tends to fall away from the lawfulness that is like a paladin or things of that nature, because a paladin will tell you pretty much how it is every time, exactly how it is. And you're not quite chaotic because you won't just lie to them to their face. You just create this alter ego to protect yourself. So, in a nutshell, that, lady and gentlemen, is neutral good.
Well, Mike, I'm going to kind of put you on the spot, kind of like you did Don and I then. And I'll do the same here with Don, and you guys can fire back at me if you so choose. But since we had the opportunity, looked at lawful good, looked at lawful neutral, then I'll ask you, key differentiation, one of the things I saw about lawful neutral was it was very logical rather than emotional. But it seems the way you're describing it that neutral good characters may use emotion a little bit more. Is that right?
Well, neutral good, you tend to bank more on your it's kind of like what you're saying. You tend to bank more on the emotion and the feelings of the environment that you're in. And I keep going back to the superheroes because they are a very clear understanding of what neutral good is. That take Spider-Man. If you know, Dr. Octopus discovers that Peter Parker is Spider-Man, then now Peter Parker is at risk 24 hours a day, not just however many hours he's Spider-Man. So his emotion of not only, you know, doing good and doing the right thing, and of course trying to love, trying to gain the love and admiration of Mary Jane. He is protecting all of this while he is Peter Parker by keeping his identity of being Spider-Man hidden. So there's emotions of not only self-preservation, but whatever it is that's driving your character. And, and like I said, these are things that you put walls up as a neutral good character. There are things that you are going to reserve from the party. There are going to be things that you are not going to let everyone know. And that's what makes you neutral. Because like I said, if you're lawful and if someone asks you, hey, are you Spider-Man? You're not going to lie to him because you're lawful. You're going to say, absolutely.
Do you agree with that assessment, Don?
I would definitely agree with that assessment. Excuse me. I really like the example of using superheroes because they do kind of lead that back and forth life where they have to have some regularity as just being themselves, you know, whether it be Cyclops and then Scott Summers or, you know, Wolverine and then Logan. You have to have that balance in your life. And I think that's really what being neutral good is all about, is balance between law and between chaos. You look at the law and you see where it applies, and then you look at basically a way to manipulate the law or get around the law as a chaotic character would, but you are not necessarily there to openly break that law because usually there's not a real reason to have to, you know, whereas, you know, as I discussed a couple episodes ago, as a lawful good character, you know, that is, law is what you use in order to do good for others. You know, you use your parameter of the understanding of law as your tool to execute good onto people, whereas a neutral good character, I feel like you use both the abilities to translate the laws and the regulations, as well as, well, if the laws and regulations will not allow me to aid these people, you know, if there's a process that these people have to go through in order to get that help, but they don't have time to do it, I'm going to do everything in my power to still try and help them. So you're not against the law, but you're not necessarily always hard up like a lawful good character would be to follow it. So I honestly think neutral good is probably one of my favorite characters styles to play. Kind of building off of a little bit of what Mike said during his spotlight, the character that he ended up turning into a neutral good character, the brother of that character I played, and I started as a neutral good character, so it was kind of a cool transition to see his character go from that character in the very beginning that was very dismal and very self-seeking.
And creepy.
And, well, not so much creepy in the beginning.
No, he was creepy.
Okay. Maybe not to me, I guess. He wasn't creepy to me, but that was just because we built our characters together. Yeah. So we totally understood the dynamic between our two characters, which was great. But to be able to play a neutral good character that knew the regulations and would constantly try and help his brother see where the law lied and then where they could deviate and still be within their right to help people and not necessarily blatantly break those laws. You know, that was definitely the fun part for me to play a neutral good character and then to see him transition into a neutral good character after playing that character for such a long time was really, I mean, it's very cool. You know, last episode we talked a lot about being that effective role player, and I think that's some of the cool things you can do when you are an effective role player is to be able to go from a character who is conflicted mentally with what they need to do to survive and then to totally turn your character concept around and see what you can do to help others survive. You know, that's what I really feel like, you know, that transition from being a quasi-neutral evil character to a neutral good character really does for you, so...
So, Josh, you talked about lawful neutralism, and I just touched on neutral good, and Don obviously talked about lawful good. So, where is the correlation between the two, or all three here? You have a lawful good, you have neutral good, and you have lawful neutral. So obviously on the spectrum, you have two good, and you have a neutral class, or neutral alignment. Do you feel that any one of these three are more, volatile to the to a party atmosphere?
I would have to say that I could see all three of them working very well together, but I think neutral good is one that I could see, especially since, you know, I was making the comment a couple episodes ago about how I prefer playing good as it may be. But I think the neutral good gives you that leeway that some people are always kind of looking for. Not that they don't necessarily disrespect the law, but they have no problem realizing if the law may be corrupt. And a lawful neutral character would not, because the law is the law, is the law, is the law. And a lawful good will not only think that, you know, the law is everything, but we're also doing, this law is in place for the greater good. Lawful neutral does not care about good, evil, emotion, any of it. So all three of them could work together. However, you'd have some very entertaining conversations at the end.
I would definitely agree with that. Donald?
Kind of looking at what Josh had to say, too, I feel like as party members, the cool dynamic that you could even do with like a lawful neutral, lawful good, and neutral good characters, you could have your policeman, if you will, be the lawful good character. You can have your judge being the lawful neutral character. And technically, you could have your executioner being the neutral good character and looking at what the lawful neutral character is asking of, you know, their executor to accomplish. And then as a neutral good character, looking at whomever they may be trying, whether they are a severely evil person, you know, it's a neutral good character has a little bit more freedom to be creative with a lot of the things that they can do. You are not as restricted by your principles when it comes to the actual law. So you can kind of fudge the lines just a little bit with a neutral good character. And I think there's a lot of really cool things you can do with some of that. So I definitely think that there's a balancing act that you have to do with them, but you could pull it off. I think that would be really fun to see.
Awesome. Miss Dr. Deb, I know you have a couple characters that are neutral good. As kind of I wouldn't say resident expert, but I will. Tell me a little bit about playing a neutral good character on the normal, like, day in, day in, out travel with a party. Like, how does that work with you?
Well, you are right. I actually, the very first character that I ever played was a neutral good character. So I have a very soft spot in my heart for neutral good. And still to this day, it's the class that I'm most comfortable playing. I could snap off a neutral good character with very little effort, actually. And so I'm actually sitting here listening to you guys and really kind of delve deeper into, why am I so comfortable playing neutral good? What is it about it that it makes it a very natural fit for me? And what I was thinking is that what Don was saying about the balancing act with neutral, it's not really lawful, and yet they have an understanding that the law is necessary sometimes. We need to do these things according to the law sometimes. But they also understand that gray exists, and that there are times when, to accomplish the greater good, chaotic efforts are going to be necessary. But they don't embrace either one. They're kind of a tightrope class. So what I tend to find myself falling back on when I end up having a chaotic versus lawful characters, and they're trying to, you know, oh, well, we're going to do it this way. No, we should do it this way. And they're kind of banging heads. I back up and I resort back to the character is good. Okay, that to me is the basic of where neutral good comes from. What is for the greater good? What is going to accomplish the best good for the most people in the shortest amount of time? And sometimes that is doing it through the law. And sometimes that is going the policeman route. And sometimes it can be very chaotic, a very Robin Hood-ish kind of a feeling. But ultimately, I think for a neutral good character, if you ask them what drives you, it's actually what is the greatest good that I can accomplish, you know, based on my own conscience. It isn't with a lawful character where it's according to the law, and that's the way we accomplish good is through the law. Seems like it feels like what a lawful good character is. Whereas the chaotic good is, oh, it's kind of whatever I feel like. Today I'm not, you know, today I'm just going to do this and I'm going to do that and I'll accomplish some good with it. But with the neutral, I feel like they actually can see both worlds. They actually have a bigger, they see a bigger picture maybe than the lawful and the chaotic do, is they see that both are equally legitimate and they have to go through a thought process of what in this situation would be the best. So maybe they're a little more thoughtful character and that they have to consider and have a better explanation for why am I doing what I'm doing. Because if you're always going lawful, you're not neutral anymore. Same for chaotic. They have to be able to see both sides and balance that, because otherwise they're going to start to shift and they're going to start to become the policeman versus kind of the Robin Hood. So I think that's one reason why I enjoy the characters, is because I have to put more thought into thinking, okay, what would this character really do? And I think I like that, because I think that suits my personality a little better. So I think that's why it's more comfortable for me to play neutral good. But now that I'm hearing this, I'm starting to realize I need to stretch myself and maybe start to play policeman a little more, or play the judge a little more, because that would not be an easy mental shift for me to make. So I think I'm kind of throwing down the gauntlet for myself to try to play out of my comfort zone, because neutral good is, you know, is my go-to, and I could do it in my sleep. So I think I need to start shoving myself to some different alignments and kind of have some fun with it, see what comes out.
And overall, I think that's what we hope that as you guys are listening to this, that you know, you're going to find a natural alignment that you like to play or that just kind of fits your personality. And we just want to expose these alignments and just give them some light, give them some love, because there are some alignments that just kind of get ignored. Be it, you know, a game master doesn't want any evil members in the party or whatever, and you're just really shutting down a lot of the role play that takes place. So I hope that, you know, as you listen through this and you progress, that we can just open your eyes, not only on maybe your backbone alignment that you love to play, and give you some different insight as we see it, as we progress through this, or maybe just open your eyes and realize that, you know, hey, maybe being that lawful good cop guy or that judge is not really as hard as I thought it was. And you can just kind of, you know, broaden your spectrum as a role player, because there's nothing more than we want is for you guys to enjoy your gaming experience, because if you enjoy your gaming experience, everyone else around you is going to enjoy your gaming experience as well.
Bring out your inner gamer.
Spreads like wildfire.
That's right. So our versus topic is this evening, not related to any of this faction stuff of alignment. Well, I guess
sure
it kind of
is.
I guess it kind of is.
It depends on your opinion of the companies.
It's more about loyalty than it is. It's more about loyalty than it is alignment.
Yeah.
We are going to talk about your next gen gaming systems, the PlayStation 3, the Xbox 360, and the Wii. So this is kind of a triple threat versus topic. Kind of a, you know, get you on all three sides here. And we're going to go around the table here, and we're just going to. I know some of us own more than one console, and I'm going to put you on a spot. You're only choosing one. You don't get to say which ones you own. You're going to choose the one that you like the most. Donald.
Xbox 360.
Deborah.
Wii.
Josh.
Sony PlayStation 3.
Nice cheap plug. Tony.
PlayStation 3.
And I like the Xbox 360.
And you are wrong.
But we forgive you.
Sadly, he's mistaken.
We can, you know,
who's
probably
in charge
find,
of this show?
I was going to say, we could probably find somebody to sit in front of his mic from now on.
I don't necessarily agree that it's wrong.
I can find all kinds of people to sit on the fence.
So true.
So here we go. We have a kind of a three-way dance here about consoles. And we're going to be kind of hard-pressed to stay with just looking at the consoles. I know there is a huge difference in the game availability, the exclusive games that are only on the 360 or only on the Wii or only on the Sony crap box. But I...
Oh, man.
Now that we're even. We're just going to try and talk about the console. I know we will probably degrade into the talking about the games that are on these systems, but we really just wanted to kind of spend some time talking about the functionality, the options that are available, and really just kind of want to, Big Don over here works at a very large electronics distributor, works there. And it's just when people come in and ask these questions, we want you to be educated before you buy one of these. I mean, granted, they're not, $600 anymore. But in this economy and the way things are going, $250 is still a good chunk of change. You know, you worked hard for your money. We want you to be able to be informed. We want you to be educated. And we want you to be able to get the most enjoyment out of what it actually is that you're buying. Because I know I myself and Josh is the same way. We took the first run of our prospective consoles and, by the grace of the deities that we worship, that they're still alive.
Yes, they are.
Surprisingly.
I mean, I haven't had the red ring of death and Josh hasn't exploded into a fiery ball of death. I mean, this is good stuff for us. So, Don, as being, I guess, our expert in the area.
With the big box store.
With the good deal store.
You mean the one that rhymes with rest rye?
Yeah.
Jeez.
As you come in, these people need to be educated. So tell us a little bit about the differences between some of these systems.
Okay. I will start with the simplest of the systems and work my way up. So the simplest of all three of the systems is the Nintendo Wii. It is a motion capture gaming. It has a motion sensor bar that you can attach to the top of your TV or entertainment center, wherever you'd like it, actually. And it works off of a motion control remote. Yes, Josh. Sorry. It is a motion capture remote that actually has a secondary controller that you can plug into the back that is known as the Nunchuck. And it has a control stick on it and a couple buttons. And essentially, it allows you to stand up and use your body in the actual gameplay of it. Now, obviously, as gamers tend to do, there are many, many gamers out there that have figured out that you can pretty much just chillax on your couch and play your Wii without really putting a ton of effort into it. But to me, as kind of a genuine gamer, I really like to take advantage of what those consoles are built to do. So when I play the Wii, I like to stand up and I like to, chuck my controller right into my television and bowl and...
it's your fault.
Yeah, well, So, in a nutshell, that is a lot of what the Wii does. Now, the upsides to the Wii is they have a huge family game selection. They are standard definition gaming, so you can play them on any television that has an RCA plug-in, which is great. So, you don't have to go out and buy a really expensive HDTV to get the fullest gameplay out of it. And then there is, coming soon... if you've seen any of the E3 reports, there is a new advancement into the Nintendo Wii. It's actually called the Wii U. And if you get a chance, check that out online. It's pretty cool looking.
So, Don, by family games,
yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, they have a huge selection of games that are geared towards 2-4 player multiplayer. A lot of cartoon graphics and things like that, so they're a lot more friendly to younger children. The learning curve on the game, though, it is a motion capture gaming, and it might seem to some gamers like it's a little bit more complicated to play. There are very few buttons on the actual controller, so it's a lot more fun to actually get into the game physically and be able to play it, and it's very friendly to younger children. I know that that's probably one of the most popular game systems that we sell to families that have children probably under the age of, like, I would say 10 to 12, under that age is where a lot of people will fall in the Wii market. Not to say that there's anybody who might be older than that has it and that it's a bad system for them. Debbie has one and she loves it. And so there's quite a few of us that have gotten a chance to really play it and enjoy it. So I'm not deterring anyone under or over the age of 12 to get one because it is a lot of fun. So,
And I will have to tell you that the Nintendo Wii, in my honest opinion, from playing it, has really made the art of losing a game fun.
Yeah.
It's true.
I have never had so much fun losing a game in my entire life.
Yeah. And
than when it happens when I play the Nintendo Wii.
I totally agree. And in my honest opinion, when it comes to the actual game selection, I know we're not going to try and get too much into the game selection at first, but some of the better games, at least that I have played, that I really enjoy, is the new Super Mario World. Tons
yes.
of fun. Four-player game. If you get a chance to play it, it's great. A lot of the Mario-themed games are really fun. Super Smash Brothers, you know, like I said, new Super Mario World.
Mario Kart.
Thank you,
yes.
Mario Party. Actually, the new Donkey Kong
yes.
game.
Oh, the new Donkey Kong. So
tons of
fun.
Is it Little Big Planet on?
No, that's PlayStation.
It's PS3.
I couldn't remember. I knew it was on there. I couldn't remember if it was on there.
And they do have, for the guys who like to play a lot of fun games, they do have the Wii Fit if you like to do mm-hmm. exercise. They have Madden. They have
Sports.
Call of Duty. They do have Wii Sports. Mm-hmm. So there's a pretty large game base for the Wii, and I definitely encourage people who have younger children who they want to get into gaming with them. It's definitely a good console to use.
Awesome. So shifting gears here and stepping up in the next gen console, Josh, why don't you tell us about your bread and butter, that is the PlayStation 3, and all of its glory.
Okay, I'm going to do the best I can not to turn on my tech
Time's
hat.
Up.
Oh, come on now. And I will go to the biggest functionality that I've always noticed from the PlayStation 3 when it came out. When it came out, it was the Blu-ray player. There were others on the market, but when it came to buying Blu-ray, when it started out on the market, wanting to go to the high-definition system, you know, it really launched Blu-ray into the victor's circle, as it may be. But in terms of gaming perspective, they did latch onto the heels of Microsoft and launch their PlayStation Network, which was another online store that you can go and buy games. It can also download games and play online with games that allowed it. But the advantage the PlayStation had over the Xbox 360 was multiplayer gaming was free out of the box. There was no additional charge. You could play, if your game supported multiplayer gaming, the Sony PlayStation 3 did as well, as long as it had an internet connection. The other thing that the PlayStation 3 was touted for when it came out was a functionality in it called DLNA, which is, I think, the Digital Life Networking Alliance or something like that. And what that basically meant was is you could, over your home network, stream music, movies, and pictures from your desktop computer straight to your television without having to hook your computer up to it, because your PlayStation 3 was already hooked up to it. And for me, but outside of gaming, I probably use that functionality more than anything else. My music collection, being able, we just sat in here and listened to some of the music from the Tron Legacy movie just right before we started recording. And the functionality in it that was a huge, huge step, because I think Microsoft ended up bringing that in to their functionality after the PlayStation 3 came out. I could be wrong on that, so don't quote me. But on a gaming perspective, now, after Nintendo's success, they launched the PlayStation Move, which is very similar to the Nintendo Wiimote and Nunchuck setup, except instead of being a motion detection device, which is more what I would probably call the Wii motion detection or motion sensor device, the PlayStation utilized motion capture technology similar to the movies. You've seen those guys who wear the black suits with the white balls on them or whatever, and cameras will capture their movements. The idea behind the PlayStation Move is exactly that, to give you a glowing wand with a ball on the top of it that glowed, that the PlayStation Eye camera would capture, along with the navigation controller, as it was called, to give you multi-axis control for now that it's really utilizing first-person shooters. Their Killzone line has released a gun attachment that allows you to really feel what they're calling a one-to-one connection and detection with the PlayStation Move system.
SOCOM also comes with that okay. same sensor. So yeah.
So so that's on the motion detection as they were jumping off with the Wii, but they also had in their system their what their remote controls was Bluetooth connectivity, which also would allow you to hook up a Bluetooth keyboard, a Bluetooth headset. Everything was on that Bluetooth standard so that you could buy a lot of different generic things to hook up to the PlayStation 3 without it needing to be the proprietary Sony software or Sony hardware. Now, Sony prefers using Sony hardware, but you don't necessarily have to. So from a hardware standpoint, it was a lot more open for people to put their own equipment on it, develop for it, and bring not only the gaming experience into the high-definition world, but also bring media to your high-definition television. And I think those are two major things about the PlayStation 3 that to me, push them over the edge of the other two.
Well, right on. And I'm going to talk about the Xbox 360 and you know, Anton, Deb, if you guys feel free to, you guys, you know, want to just throw your 3 cents in here. I like Josh, I own the first run Xbox 360, so, you know, mine has a hard drive the size of my pinky, and, you know, its functionality was literally cutting edge at the time that it was all coming out. I know the bonus that I got for having a 360 was there was a considerable amount of backwards compatible games that I could play from the Xbox. There wasn't everything. Everything wasn't supported on the 360, but a considerable amount, almost every game that I wanted to play from the Xbox, the original Xbox, was backwards compatible with my Xbox 360. I know they have emulators and stuff now that they can use to emulate the Xbox and run that stuff on your Xbox 360 now. But that was a huge selling point for me. Plus, for me, I was always a fan of the Xbox, and so my natural progression was to go from the Xbox to the Xbox 360. And, you know, where Josh, his loyalties was with the PlayStation, the original PlayStation. And to be honest, you get used to a controller style, you get used to a gaming style, and that's generally, you know, we laughed about being an alignment thing, but really it is. It's a loyalty factor. I have no complaints about the PlayStation 3. It's a phenomenal gaming system. I am just a Microsoft and a Xbox.
Don't backtrack.
Hey, who's hosting this show?
Oh, sorry.
I'm just an Xbox 360 supporter. And like Josh mentioned, which is why I made him go first, because it just makes my job really easy. The Xbox had the Xbox Live. And that really just, I mean, it revolutionized what gaming was. And it was not only that you could go to your local game store and pick up a game and buy it and plug it in and play it. Now they had things that they were really literally putting games on that market that you could just download, which means I don't have to get up and I don't have to go out when it's 112 degrees or storming or whatever. I could just buy them off the Xbox Live and bingo, I have it. And then that also opened avenues, like we talked about when we talked about PC and console gaming. It opened the avenue of updates and downloadable content and all of this stuff that the consoles were severely lacking as far as in the realm of comparing to PC games. It was not until the Xbox and the PS3 that they really opened up that avenue of being able to digitally update games on the fly.
It really changed it from a gaming device to a home entertainment device.
Absolutely. And it really took the game... I mean, literally, you know, you could go to your game establishment, buy a, you know, like a Final Fantasy game or whatever, buy a game, put it in, and that's, you know, you paid $60 for that game, and that's what you got. Now, it's really up the value of going and buying these games, because I'm going to go buy a $60 game, I'm going to play it, I'm going to beat it, and then within 3 minutes of having the game at home, there's going to be downloadable content online that's going to unlock new characters, that's going to unlock new places, that's going to... It's just going to take... Now, granted, most of those things you have to pay for, but that's going to take your $60 game that you know and love and would love to continue to play and continue to change the game. Because nothing frustrates me more than having a game that I really love to play, and I've beaten it so many times that I don't want to play it anymore.
You're beating it that you can beat it in your sleep.
I mean, literally. And with the markets like that, they continue to revolutionize this era of gaming, and it just adds freshness to all these games that you know and love. And I think that's where the Xbox and all these next-gen consoles have really just kind of cornered the market on being able to keep up with the PC in that area. But, you know, like we discussed in that discussion, we talked about PC and console gaming, that I think now the PC is now falling behind because all these next-gen consoles are just replacing the ability to have to go to the computer and update things. Tony?
That's another thing about that is that dealing with updates is that they can release games a lot faster because back in the day, they had to make sure there were no bugs anywhere in the entire game. And that's something nowadays that they can release a game with a couple bugs and patch it over time, figure out where the bugs are, get the mass groups in, and they don't necessarily have to do as much internal testing as they used to. They can do some testing, make sure the big stuff's done, and then work out the little stuff with the patches on the game consoles after the game's out. And that really does change the speed in which these games can come out, which back in the day, it used to take a whole lot of time to release the games just because there was just so many bugs to try to figure out and try to figure out every loophole and all that kind of stuff.
So, Deb, I know you're kind of a cornerstone of the Wii there.
I have one, too.
So as you venture forth and you hear us talking about the PS3 and the Xbox, do you really think that when Nintendo, you know, when they're sitting up in their office and they were discussing the idea of this crazy game system called the Wii, do you really think that they understood exactly the ramifications that they were really making on the gaming world when they were going to make a system that was not only motion sensitive, but still keep with the Nintendo name of having things like Mario and Duck Hunt and all this stuff that was really just toned to a gaming genre of just kids? I mean, why in the world would they want to abandon and try and play with, you know, the big guys like the Xbox 360 and the PS3? Now, I know they are with, you know, Call of Duty and stuff like that on the Wii, but to be completely honest, if I was going to go buy a family fun game, even before I even talk about a system, if I was going to buy a family oriented game, naturally my mind comes to the Nintendo. So Deb, when you as a gamer who enjoys the Wii, do you think that they really realized exactly what they were doing when they were revolutionizing gaming?
Now, hang on just a second, Deb, just to make sure you realize that the Wii did come out before both the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360. So they actually set that bar, but I don't mean to cut you off.
That's what I was saying. They were revolutionizing what was becoming of gaming.
Do I think they realized it? That's a hard question. I think they might have dreamed it. I think it might have been one of those, wouldn't it be amazing if this actually took hold and this might actually work? Because I think they knew what a gamble they were making. Because the picture everyone would have had in their mind of Nintendo is you know, there was the GameCube, and then, you know, for old school people like me, you know, you remember Mario, you know, running to beat Bowser. I mean, this is the picture of Nintendo. And realizing this is going to be totally different from what they've thrown before. But the big thing that I just that I loved about it is the whole point of gaming, whether it's any sort of gaming, is to tap into the creative outlet in us. It's to be creative. It's to be different. It's to be exciting. It's to be fun. And what Nintendo did when they did that is they totally jumped right out of the box and said, we're going to make gaming a different experience. We're going to show you something that's never been done before. And it could have flopped, but what they were gambling is that the gamers in every form, from kids all the way to older people, would realize, you know what, this is different. This is fun. This is just laughable. You know, the fact that I could, you know, destroy my TV as I'm playing a bowling game on this is hilarious. The four-way Mario World concept. I mean, how many times did I actually think, as I was playing Mario with my brother, Super Mario Brothers 3, and we had to go back and forth, and we're both good at those games, and so we go back and forth. It'd be really cool if we could be in the game at the same time, so I don't have to wait for you to play. Yeah, I know. Okay, I don't think they'll ever get that. Okay, whatever. And we play. I actually remember making that comment to him, and I was like, 13, 4. I don't even remember how old I was. And the Wii does it. I can now sit with all three of my brothers and we can all play, all four of us play in that Mario game in Wii and totally kill each other and just have mass chaos and have an absolutely fantastic time. So I think once they saw that people got it, there are enough people that connected to that vision of creativity, that difference, growth, next gen ideas, that I think that they were just delighted. And then PlayStation obviously was following in their footsteps. So you know what? PlayStation was kind of a, you know, wannabe because Nintendo did it first. But, and then I love, okay, I'll be honest. If someone hands me, the first time anyone ever handed me a PlayStation controller, I literally picked it up, I turned it over, and I looked at all of these buttons on the thing. And I was like, what the heck do you do with all... What is this? You got buttons on the back, you got buttons on the front. What am I supposed to do? Launch into orbit in this thing? What do I do?
Which PlayStation controller?
I don't even remember. It was probably 2.
Okay.
It was probably PlayStation 2.
Which is the same one they're using now, except it's wireless.
I think it was 2.
The PlayStation 1 had less buttons.
And so, I believe it's motion sensitive, too.
If you still have the 6-axis controllers, yes.
Yeah. So someone hands me that, and I'm just like... Okay, what do I even press? Do I use the D-pad? Do I use this one? Do I use this? What am I doing? And I've been known and getting laughed at because I'm like, you're supposed to press the square, and I'm pressing the X, and I'm pressing the circle, and I'm like, I don't know. Apparently, I need to press the face, except they don't have a face. I don't know. You hand me a Wii controller. It's simple. It's actually kind of pretty. It's kind of elegant. They don't have 6,000 buttons. It's got the idea of the Nintendo built right inside it. If you know the A and B on the Nintendo... I jumped right in, someone handed me, and I was like, oh, it's just like a Nintendo controller. Cool. And I'm off to the races. I don't have to be having a whole new techno class of PlayStation 101. Here is your controller.
Except you can't smash A and B with your thumb anymore.
I know. I do. I am sad about that.
No, but you can smash 1 and 2.
True, but it's not the same.
No, I agree. You know, we'll have a memorial service for that later, but...
So, Donald, as we wrap it up... Why don't you leave us with some golden nugget?
Well,
words of wisdom.
I think kind of building off of everything that we have talked about so far, and first of all, building off of what Debbie was saying, I think that in retrospect, I doubt that Nintendo really took in what they were going to be doing when it came to changing the gaming world, because every system right now has some sort of motion gaming. So with the Wii, it's just the standard Wii. With the PlayStation, you've got the PlayStation Move. And with the Xbox 360, you have the Kinect. All of them have their high points and low points. The Kinect, you know, you don't even need a controller with the Kinect, which I think is amazing. Stop it. You don't need a controller with the Kinect. It actually follows your body, which is really cool. You can actually use a voice recognition.
Spooky.
Yeah, spooky. You can actually use a voice recognition and tell your Xbox what to do.
Xbox, play.
That's right.
Star Trek is here.
That's right. So I think in general, what I would really like to see is where we are in gaming within the next 5 years. Because I really feel like we are starting to open the doors into true virtual reality gaming, because we've already got motion capture gaming. We've already got 3D gaming. You can look at the hand console, the 3DS, the Nintendo 3DS. You don't even need 3D glasses to play that thing. Now, it takes a second to get adjusted, but...
Sony's coming out with a headset that's a 3D head element.
Oh, monitor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a big, like, $800 thing, but...
Well, but I mean, but that right there is, you know, that kind of thing is, you know, with what Nintendo did, it's the door of virtual, true virtual reality gaming actually coming into the market, not the cheesy 1980s Lawnmower Man virtual reality that we all thought we were going to be playing, but
8-bit greatness.
Yeah, that's right. But it's just amazing to see where gaming is going, and whether you're an Xbox fan, a PlayStation 3 fan, or a Wii fan, you have to be excited to where the console world is going to go. So,
for a gaming fan, you have to be excited.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely.
So as we wrap up, I just want to remind you that last episode we established one dice, two dice, red dice, blue dice. And today, we have established that move it, shake it, or connect to it. Either way, have fun with it. We'll see you later.
Peace.
I like that.